There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome everybody to Pick a Flick, the show where you pick a film and we talk about it. I'm your host Tony Black and I'm joined once again by me old mocker who's been on the show several times, the bottle episode's very own, Mr. Matt Laver.
And thank you for having me. And I don't know why I saluted.
Yeah, you did. You actually saluted. It's a shame this isn't a video podcast.
I'm glad it's not a video podcast.
I'm usually glad it's not a video podcast because, you know, there is a picture you've just put up on Twitter actually of me where I look like a hiding marshmallow man from the Simpsons, from the Ghostbusters.
The Ghostbusters.
That's like when
unfortunately, that's an 80s comedy. I mean.
That's like when old people say things, isn't it? You know, yeah. the Ghostbusters.
Oh, what's that character he plays? Doctor Who? No. Yeah. I quite like him as Doctor Who.
The Doctor. Yeah. So today we are doing a 90s comedy special, effectively. And we have two choices that are based on films that have been nominated and they revolve around the 90s. And we've got some great listener feedback coming from films that they've said that they love from the 90s. So this should be a, you know, a very party time. Excellent.
Woo, 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 woo.
If we were Wayne and Garth, who would be who?
Oh, obviously I'm Tiki Era.
That's the most disturbing image I've ever heard.
We'd be the people who think we're Wayne, but we're really Garth.
That's true. Yeah, but more than likely.
Yeah.
So, before we get started, I just want to remind everyone that we are on iTunes at Pick a Flick. If you just go on there and please do leave us a review or a 5-star review, ideally, or just give us 5 stars. I know I'm shooting high there, Latham, aren't I? But, yeah. Like, you know, it's got to be done. We've got to ask people.
What happens if people leave you a 5-star review?
We will, at the very least, mention you, and there might be some form of remuneration.
Oh, so you're going to pay people?
No.
So are you bribing your audience?
Moving on. Anyway, we have, there will definitely be a mention on the podcast and a big thank you. So it would be great because it will help us be found more among the film podcast community and things like that. So please do go on there and give us a bit of a vote up. We're also part of the Black Hole Media Podcast Network and you can find other podcasts on there at www.blackholepodcast.com. Not Beehole Media anymore.
Not Bumhole Media,
because everyone has a filthy mind. I've realised everyone in the world saw Beehole Media and went, bums. Literally. It's just filth.
Yeah.
Absolute filth. You should all be ashamed. But yeah, go on to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. So, 90s comedy, Latham.
Yeah.
Shall we start?
We shall.
Okay, let's pick a flick. South Park, Bigger, Longer and Uncut is a 1999 American adult animated musical comedy film based on the Comedy Central television series South Park.
Never.
I know, it's a shock to me as well. The film was directed by series co-creator Trey Parker and stars the regular television cast of Parker, Matt Stone, Mary Kay Bergman and Isaac Hayes, with guest performances by George Clooney, Eric Idle, Big Floppy Donkey Dick,
and Montana,
and Mike Judge. The plot follows the four boys from South Park as they see a controversial R-rated movie featuring Canadians Terrence and Philip. Terrence and Philip!
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Hey!
Get on with it. Get on with it.
Get on with it. And begin cursing incessantly. Their parents pressure the United States to wage war against Canada for allegedly corrupting their children. The film tackles issues of censorship, bad parenting, and freedom of speech. It parodies animated Disney films released during the Disney Renaissance, such as Beauty and the Beast and The Little Mermaid, as well as musicals such as The West End's Les Misérables, and satirises the controversy surrounding the show itself. The film was released in theatres on June 30th, 1999, and it was produced on a $21 million budget and went on to gross $83 million worldwide in theatres, making it the highest-grossing R-rated animated film of all time. The song Blame Canada earned Parker and Mark Shaiman a nomination for Academy Award for Best Original Song at the 72nd Academy Awards. Let's see one of the many very entertaining clips of South Park the movie.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. You're a cocksucking, ass-licking Uncle Fucker. You're an Uncle Fucker, yes it's true. Nobody fucks uncles quite like you.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. You're the one that fucked your uncle, Uncle Fucker. You don't eat or sleep or mow the lawn. You just fuck your uncle all day long.
What's going on here?
Yesterday,
Uncle Baka, that's UNCLE. Fuck you, Uncle Baka!
Suck my bath.
Okay, South Park the movie then is one that I think we watched many, many moons ago when we were wee nippers. Mm-hmm. So, what do we make of it?
Anyone who asks me about what's your favourite film or what are your favourite films. And my favourite films have been brought up on this podcast before.
Demolition Man. Sorry.
Yeah.
So a bit of a tickle there. So, where that came from.
But there's always four I'll always mention who are like my top four films before anything else.
I can't hardly wait for this list, Latham.
I know. I can't hardly wait for you to stop making that joke. And one of the four is Say Apart, Bigger, Longer and Uncut. And it's probably one of the four of the list that's probably all... flawless. I think I can't find any fault with it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite films, and out of my four favourite films, it's probably, at a push, not my most favourite out of those favourite four, but it's probably the most flawless one out of the four.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I love this film so much. I think it's a masterpiece. Honestly do.
Yeah. Why though? Why then is it a masterpiece? Why do you think that?
It's what it's the message of the film is what it's trying to do, and how it's managed. I think the show had only been on the air for about 2 years, and for a show that's still on the air in its 19th season, I think, to be able to reach a point 2 years in, to be able to self-mock the reaction of parents to it, it's a remarkable achievement, particularly when you think about the history of the show as it went on, like, and what will happen with it with all these different groups attacking it, like eventually Scientology I think the only religious group that quite like it or have not said anything bad about it is Mormonism. Is the Church of Mormon.
They must have had a go at the Church of Mormon though. I mean, they've done everyone, haven't they?
I think they have. There's a great episode where they pretty much do the whole Joseph Smith story, and they've got like this all about the Mormons. That's it, all about the Mormons. And then again, just Trey Parker and Matt Stone did the Book of Mormon. And the church had got a whole page advertising the actual church, saying, "Now you've seen the play, read the book."
Yeah.
In the actual programme. I mean, the idea being is that South Park is probably known for attacking certain, pretty much most institutions of any nature, any gender, race, religion, group, pretty much anything.
Denomination.
Yeah, pretty much. If it exists, they probably attacked it at some point.
Yeah.
And the film pretty much managed to at least get Jobes into several different things at once. Although, when you think about it, considering this was in 1999, I'm quite surprised that Islam's not actually in the film, which is quite surprising considering what they do in the show afterwards,
yeah,
particularly Islam.
Maybe they just at some point went, "We've got everything else in this film."
Yeah, but
maybe we just don't have room.
But this was before, but then again, this was before 9/11.
It was
not before, and it's quite strange thinking about it now. You know, it's a pre 9/11 film as well, considering what the show ends up doing with it.
Yeah.
So, but the way it kind of mocks itself so early on in the show's life already, and it does actually have a lot of strong, mature things to say in juvenile humour, and quite a lot of praise for South Park as a whole is saying that what people sometimes forget through all the swearing and the jokes. And to be fair, there's not that much swearing in the show. It's quite. I remember watching the film last week in preparation for this, and when you start hearing the characters, the kids swear, it's actually quite jarring considering what you see on the. What you've seen in the show itself,
but the whole reason for that is that it's a very crucial part of the story.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's very clever.
Exactly. Yeah, and Trey Parker. Funny enough, also the idea of kids wanting to go and watch films and perhaps trying to sneak in is probably something that's still apparent today. And Trey Parker and Matt Stone. I couldn't find it, but I do remember reading years and years ago that because Wild Wild West was there at the same time. And Trey and Matt Stone saying Wild Wild West is going to make a shitload of money.
Yeah.
Of kids buying tickets for that and sneaking in to watch South Park.
Yeah.
And that's the plot of the film as well. And I mean, I was 13 when it came out. So and the film was rated 15.
Mm.
So I never actually watched it at the cinema, but I know friends in my year at school who snuck in to go and watch South Park movie, and some of them saw South Park. It's the same year that I think it was the same period of time where I remember friends of mine sneaking in to go and watch Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, it was the same year. I think Blair Witch was about a month or so before or afterwards.
Yeah, but it's quite funny. So. But it's that intelligence that they're self aware that they know kids are going to try and see this film.
Oh yeah.
And right afterwards when the kids start swearing to all their friends and all the friends are like, "Ooh," and like in awe of all these swear words they're saying. Yeah. Goes, "You ass ramming uncle fuckers," and then the whole look, about 20 kids go, "Oh, we got to see this movie."
Yeah.
I remember
shit face cock master.
I remember back in the day, like when
we're
like,
old enough to say that now.
Yeah, back in the day, Tranmere King,
from Albert Fields,
Tranmere King. We all had Elvis.
Aye.
No idea what accent that was.
let's not get my human accents. We've been here before.
I'll try my Canadian later. Hey, buddy.
Fuck you, buddy.
We apologise to all Canadian listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We apologise if we're being rude about Canadian listeners.
But then again, as much as they characterise the Canadians with their very similar looks and stuff.
They're blockheads. Like that. Yeah.
What's quite funny is that the Canadians.
And their mouths are dumb. You're a racist.
Let me finish. Now I'm finished.
Okay.
We also apologise because this might just descend into quoting.
It will descend into just quoting, yeah.
But then again, the genius in the film is that the Canadians might look like they're being mocked at, but they're actually the smarter country. How'd you get on the US's bad side? Bomb the Baldwins. And the Arquette residents as well. We have news just in, they bomb the Arquettes. No survivors.
It's
you know what's good about being a Baldwin? Because everything.
I think the The real greatness of this, there's several things. The first thing is the fact that it's very much a satire that knows its targets. You know, they've said it's a cautionary tale on censorship, which obviously, as you've said, is the big one. It's telling that it's Cartman using foul language, ultimately, which saves the day.
Yeah.
Right? Which is their way of saying that the point they're trying to get across is that these lynch mobs, effectively, and this mass hysteria is created quite often through things that are really not worth getting insane about.
Like, yeah.
You know, the villain of the piece is Sheila Broflovsky, isn't it? It's Kyle's mum.
Yeah. Which I think is perfectly pitched as well.
It's very much the idea that, you know, parents and, as I said, lazy child rearing come into sharp criticism for this. And it's the whole thing of, through these kids and through the toilet humour and everything about and the silly gags, it manages to make a very strong point about the way we are ironically trying to protect our children, but at the same time we're actually causing more problems necessarily than we would otherwise.
Yeah.
And by actually trying to be this insane amount of censorship, the consequences of that build and build, and ultimately it builds to war in this case.
Yes, exactly.
But it's like not
hell.
And hell rising. Yeah. I mean, they really top it up. Obviously, you know, they take it to comedic extremes, but their point is very valid about this. And that's the great thing about this film, is that it's very, very silly. It's very rude. You know, it's probably one of the most obscene films that's ever been made.
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it's like, is there over 200 F-bombs in it? Or am I getting confused with Pulp Fiction? Because I'm pretty sure Pulp Fiction's on a list of the most F-bombs used in a film.
I don't know. I'm trying to find the number, actually. Doesn't say. It would be out there. There's probably as many as Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
But then the other genius fact is that somehow, and nobody has done this since, they managed to make it a genuinely brilliant musical.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I mean, it's telling that they got an Academy Award for one of the songs, or they were nominated.
It was the I think it was the Phil Collins song from Tarzan that won in the end.
Yeah. Oh, of course, yeah, because everyone went, "Oh, fuck off!" Yeah,
and to which that, and then I think season 4 pretty much opened up with like every time Phil Collins would appear in like the first few episodes of season 4, and he would just have the Academy Award in his hand.
Yeah,
there's about 3 or 4 episodes with the suffix 2000 because it was 2000 when season 4 aired, and like they just took the mick and piss out of Phil Collins.
Well, you would do, I mean, because it's it was written by professional people who had worked on Disney animations, who had come from that grounding.
Yeah.
It wasn't just joke songs; it was actual proper. Proper music, proper musical songs.
Have we seen a stage musical yet? We have bollocks.
We should do, because that would sell out like one's business.
Yeah.
And people, the songs are so catchy.
Yeah.
And they are so, almost all of them you could probably sing.
Yeah. No. Okay. Question: which one's your favourite?
Oh, without question, this may surprise you. Without a shadow of a doubt, Big Al. I'm super. Thanks for asking.
Wow!
I just find that hilarious every single time.
Okay. I would say my.
But it's difficult. They're all great.
I'd go for Brian Botano.
Oh yeah.
And the thing on the DVD.
What would Brian Botano do?
If he were here right now, he'd make
sure
plan,
kick an ass or two.
That's what Brian Botano do.
Yeah.
Now the DVD has the DVDA version of that, where it's pretty much everyone's doing the. Cups before cups was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Not cups. They're just tapping there going...
Tapping there. There's also the video, which has the brilliant... I've never seen a man in so many chicken wings. And it just goes... I've never seen a man in so many chicken wings.
I've never seen a man in so many chicken wings.
That's just... Every time that's on, I sing along. I have to.
You just have to watch the credits all the way through.
It comes back
with Trey Parker's usual attempt at a soft, weepy thing with Through the Eyes of a Child.
But this is it. It's like it knows what it's taking the piss out of, and every song is taking the piss out of something, or it's a character song, if any, sometimes as well. And it like in Disney, you know, it's like things like Saddam Hussein singing. Yeah, oh no, Satan singing up there is a bit of all that stuff.
Yeah, it's actually a good, genuinely serious song.
It's like a song a Disney princess would sing, you know, from a tower or something, wishing or dreaming of a better life. So it's got all, you know, you mentioned the character stuff, and I think as well, so you've got great music, you've got really strong, potent themes.
Yeah.
amazing gags. You know, some of them, the script is brilliant.
Oh, it's brilliant. There's the odd cameos that come through as well. George Clooney pretty much satirizing his own ER character. Goes, God damn it, it does not get any easier. Can you accidentally replace your heart with a baked potato? You've got approximately 3 seconds to live. Oh my God, they killed Kenny. You bastard.
You've got all of those elements. And like you said, the character stuff. Yeah, and that's another thing.
Yeah, they've utilised the characters quite well. And thinking about it, when I was watching it, I was come to realise that some of the breakout characters aren't actually in the film. I mean, Randy Marsh isn't in it, and Randy Marsh is perhaps after Cartman, now probably one of the second, probably the second most popular character in South Park, and Randy Marsh isn't actually in it.
Stan's dad. Stan's dad, isn't he?
Yeah,
he wears the vest, doesn't he? And the
he's just like a trailer
park guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's
the geologist with the moustache. Because he's had an absolute load of episodes surrounding him. Because I sometimes get confused over the roles of Kyle and Stan in the show. Because they're often quite interchangeable. Because they're usually the voices of reason in an episode. And they usually have their own monologue type thing. But then in the film, you've got the romantic subplot parody with Stan and Wendy. There's the girl that I like. Hey, asshole! You're holding the goddamn lunchline!
Then he just goes, yeah! When he sees Wendy.
Hi, Stan! But then it leads to the brilliant thing where he goes, how do you get women to like you? Ooh, you gotta find the clitoris. What?
I didn't say that, children.
And then it leads to Stan finding this massive talking clitoris.
I am the clitoris. Yeah, that's in the clitoris. Yeah.
You must stop the war. No, get lost. I only know how to run.
But that's what he's doing. I mean, that's again the spoof element that he's spoofing the whole Vision Quest idea that you see in films. I mean, obviously it's got the rude, you know, naughty juvenile idea of a talking clitoris.
Yeah, but then the idea being is that, and it's something that Trey Parker and Matt Stone have said in the past that people aren't fully aware, is that they're talking about these mature adult things, but then through the eyes of an 8-year-old, they probably don't. They probably don't know the full extent of what they're talking about. So like Stan's like, guys, you know where I can find the clitoris? Dan doesn't know what he's talking about.
That's probably why.
The film again is when they know all these things like uncle fuckers and all that language that Terrence and Philip are talking about. They don't know the full connotations of what those words mean.
No.
They just think it's cool that they're hearing all these words that's causing a reaction.
Which is a very childlike thing, you know, and that's what kids do all the time, especially little kids. They can test it and they can say these things, and that's what the film builds on. It's a brilliantly clever idea.
But I'm drifting from the character.
I've got to make one change, actually. When you said earlier my favourite song, I'm going to change it to Kyle's Mum's a Bitch.
the movie version.
The movie version where Cartman goes into a proper, Kyle's Mum's a big fat fucking bitch! Kyle's Mum!
What?
That is my favourite character, anyway.
But the best person to spearhead the Angry Mom Brigade is Sheila Brosklos.
Oh, God, completely.
Which ties into the whole thing about protective parents, and so Kyle takes that role of the kid saying, no, it's my fault, blame me. Don't blame everyone else. I did the wrong thing, which is really good. Then you've got Kenny having the role of conscience for Satan. And if any film that makes Satan an anti-hero at the end, I mean, it's pretty much a precursor to what they do with... from Team America. Oh, God, the Korean...
Oh, Kim Jong-il.
Kim Jong-il. They precursor Kim Jong-il and the attempt to try and give him death by depth, by giving a lot more of a three-dimensional spin on Satan, of all people.
And they make
him a kind of a tragic, romantic, homosexual hero.
Who's been, like...
In an abusive relationship.
Abusive relationship.
Yeah. Saddam Hussein.
Hey, relax, guy!
And it's quite something where they must have wanted to use a real life villain. So because who do we think is more despicable than Satan? So they rip Saddam Hussein to shreds in this film.
Yeah.
And then probably because they know they're going to get away with it.
Well, this is it. I mean,
because they do that when they did. I think it's season 6 which is when they had Cartman and Osama bin Laden.
Well, I was about to say, yeah. If that film had been made like 5, 6, maybe even 10 years later, it would have been bin Laden. Mm-hmm. These days, it would probably be Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, or,
Putin.
Or maybe Putin, but I think Donald Trump would have more weight, carry more weight with it.
Yeah.
Or even, like, well, this is the problem with ISIS, in that there's no spearhead one guy.
Yeah.
ISIS is more about a... Do you know what I mean? Whereas quite often, with Saddam Hussein, when everyone thought of Iraq, they didn't think of the Iraqi forces or the people, they thought of Saddam. He was, you know, so there, he's an easy... you know, like Hitler. Hitler would be an easy person to do that with as well.
Yeah. But, and I think, finally as well, what I was going to say is that one thing I probably didn't actually notice until perhaps watching it last week was, from a storytelling perspective, you've got the romantic foil of Gregory from Yardale with a 4-point grade average. Come and catch me, Wendy. he's there as like the unlikable person. But when you think about how they structure the rescue attempt at the USO show, there's no actual South Park character of that age that could actually come up with that plan. So that's why that character's there.
Exactly.
And then they bring in perhaps, I'd like to say he's my favourite character in the film, which is the mole. But then I suddenly remember something else. I'm like, hang on, no.
It's difficult.
Yeah, but then you got the mole that comes in. He's only on screen for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, he's not in it much.
But he steals the film. He sounds like a giant giraffe. Hey, there's a giant giraffe around here. But that's how probably clever the film is, that they brought in that character to do, not only just to be a romantic foil for Stan. Yes, he serves a plot function, and the plot is so tight. I mean, everything that comes up in the film, like subplots, end up crossing over with the whole plot in itself. I mean, say there's the quest for the clitoris, even turns into a confidence boost for Stan in terms of growth as a character.
Definitely.
Because he found the clitoris.
But it's not that he's finding the clitoris as much as he's like, he's trying to find what he needs to do to be, you know, to get Wendy, you know, and to be, and it's all quite sweet, weirdly enough. The whole film is quite sweet, even though it's filthy, and it has quite a sweet natured element to it. That's the other strange thing, you know, even with all this, and that's the big point, really. They're saying that it doesn't matter that they're effing and blinding all over the place, right? That's not the point.
The point is
that they're trying to explain that even if they are swearing, it doesn't change the fact they're children. It doesn't change the fact of what their stories are. And then when you blend all of these really Disney numbers in that are so removed from what you'd imagine a filthy animated comedy to be, it makes you go, okay, well, the profanity doesn't matter, oddly enough. And that's the whole point. That's one of the big themes of the whole thing. And that's
the
dangers of censorship and the dangers of telling people what they can and can't say is the underlying thing.
And with that as well, you've got the idea of free speech, because this was probably before the mass of social media.
Particularly
Twitter as well, where there's like a lot of social justice that goes on in terms online.
Yeah.
Because you'll find that. And there's a lot of extension from that in this film as well. And quite a lot of online stuff where people are mostly attacked for no reason. Or mostly blamed, where something gets blamed and suddenly there's like a hate campaign against something. And
I'm reading a book about this, funnily enough, right now. If you're interested in that kind of thing, check out John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
I've heard of that.
It's a great book. I'm reading it right now. And it talks a lot about Twitter shaming and online social media shaming. So yeah, it is an extension to that. And you're absolutely right. It's the forerunner of that kind of stuff.
And the elements, I got one quote to point out, which is about the censorship as well, where it's on about the amount of language used.
Yeah.
Whereas, particularly on now as well, perhaps on network TV or TV where the American censorship thing, and this is, my knowledge of it is not 100%, but I know for a fact that there was always a thing where it seemed there was a lot more violence on TV than language and sex.
Mm.
And the bit where I think Sheila's saying, Remember what the MPAA says. Horrific, deplorable violence is okay as long as there's no naughty words. And then you've got Terrence and Philip going, what? But that's the idea is that the amount of violence that's in South Park.
Oh, yeah, 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 exactly.
Because it's comic violence, but it is violence.
But they're all, but they, you know, Parker and Stone would be very liberal-minded, anti-gun kind of people. They are. You can tell that. Only liberals could write a show like this.
Yeah, but then when you think about it, one of the running gags in the show for the first 5 years was an 8-year-old gets killed in so many very graphic ways.
Yeah.
And it is an 8-year-old boy getting killed on screen.
Yeah.
And they get away with it, but one swear word gets bleeped out.
And that's the whole point. That's the whole reason they made this film, because they were, you know, the big thing was that they were told from the very beginning by the studio, who wanted a film because the TV show was so popular.
Yeah.
And they said, let's do a movie. And they said, well, we want to do a movie that is edgy and R-rated. And they tried to get them not to do it. And then they said, look, we're not doing it unless... So what they did cleverly was go, well, let's make that the story. Let's make the story effectively the fact that you've got people telling you, you can't say this, you can't do that, yet you can blow someone up, you can shoot someone in the face.
Yeah.
You know, you can't show a nipple on TV. But it's that kind of... what's the word? Double standard.
Yes,
and
that's
it covers a lot of that, really.
Yes.
And it's just fabulous.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite films, and out of those four, it's probably at least two of them are flawless, and that's one of them.
Yeah, I can't disagree at all there. And it's got one of my favourite lines from the film is one of my favourite comedy lines ever, where the hawkish general is asked by Chef, you ever heard of the Emancipation Proclamation? And he goes, I don't listen to hip-hop.
genius. Yeah, I'm considering how much stuff they've done on racism on the show, it's probably the only time they covered racism in the actual film.
It's
a massive thing in the show, isn't it?
But it's
quite surprised how little the Chef is in it. Well.
Yeah, yeah, but he just pops in. So many people in there, though. They suppose they couldn't do
that. Operation, get behind the donkey's my ass. Operation Human Shield.
Oh, yeah, Operation Human
Protect
Shield.
Protect our tanks, too. And there's a great visual gag of just seeing a bunch of black soldiers just tied to tanks. And then Jeff goes, my ass, and just ducks. And just all the white soldiers suddenly just killed.
It's great. It's really good.
And there's a great Wounded Knight gag, which I completely forgot. He goes, when they bring Bill Gates into there, goes, God damn it, Windows 98, get Bill Gates in here. It is there, so over 2,000 teraflops. You just kill Bill Gates.
This is great. But yeah, South Park the movie, or South Park Big Longer Uncut.
Kieran, we watched this movie together. That little cocksucker betrayed us. You are a bad man. And I don't know why, but that you are a bad man always makes me crack up.
We've done well, actually, not to make this completely descend into just telling gags from this film. I think we should pat ourselves on the back for that. We've actually picked out some interesting stuff. So well done, Latham.
Well done.
And I'm sure...
And he's saying that we've not edited out an hour's worth of quoting.
No, we have actually done this.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the guy who nominated this film would be very pleased, really. This was nominated by James Morton at James_E_Morton on Twitter. And he's a writer, director, film critic, Durham grad, and he makes movies. And if you go on his Twitter, you can find a link to one of his movies. And also...
Can I?
You can. Wow. And also you can find his web address, which is jamesmortonprojects.com.
Thank you, Mr. Morton.
Thank you, yeah. Thanks for nominating this one. It's always a good one.
You want to see more of me?
Yeah, big gay Al, big gay Al.
Big gay Al, big gay Al.
Well, I do have a little song I wrote about the war. Oh, but we haven't rehearsed.
Sing it!
Yeah, sing it!
Oh, I can't.
Sing the fucking song!
Well, all right, if you insist, I'll sing my song. I believe it goes a little bit like this.
Bombs are flying, people are dying. Children are crying, politicians are lying too. Cancer is killing, Texaco's spilling. The whole world's gone to hell, but how are you?
I'm super, thanks for asking. All things considered, I couldn't be better, I'm a thing. I'm feeling super, no, nothing bugs me. Everything is super when you're... Don't you think I look cute in this hat? I'm so sorry, Mr. Cripple, but I just can't feel too bad for you right now, because I'm feeling so insanely super that even the fact that you can't walk can't bring me down.
He's super, thanks for asking. All things considered, he could be better, he must say.
substitute in this. Have these little pants with matching tie. I got it firm. I'm super.
Barracks and the trenches is where.
Stick them up.
BK Owl says we rest in town.
Skittles.
Yeah, I see super and he's proud to be vain.
Okay.
Everything is super when you're gay.
Okay, we're going to move on to talk about 90s comedies in general, and it's an interesting list. You know, South Park the movie is one of the epitomising 90s comedies.
It's one of the end of the decade.
End of the decade, but it's one of those you'd associate, I think, with the 90s. And like a lot of the decades, you know, you can associate the 80s as a very, very specific style of comedy that a lot of, you know, that we'll talk about in future podcasts, I imagine. But the 90s definitely does have its own vibe. And we asked on Twitter to start with, before we talk about them, we asked on Twitter what people thought. So I'm going to run through some ideas. And let's run through these films and let's see what you make of these films, okay? And what we both make of them. So Andrew Brooker at Brooker411 said Clerks and Dogma, or Clerks and Dogma.
I could not get 15 minutes into Clerks.
Really?
I gave up.
Oh, that's a shame.
I just find it dull.
Kevin Smith is a very divisive person, isn't he?
It was a couple of years ago. I tried to watch it, but I just could not get into it. Sorry, Brooker.
He'll be devastated.
Well, hey, to be fair, he dissed The Lion King on Twitter this morning.
Did he?
Yeah, and that's one of my favourite Disney films.
So this is in no way revenge, Brooker. but yeah, Clerks.
Fuck that! Why the fuck do I have a Fox Star Forensics?
I only watched Clerks last year, believe it or not, actually, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. Really, I prefer Dogma probably.
I like Dogma when I watch.
I think Dogma's genuinely classed as one of Smith's best films, if not his best film. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would say that. I would venture that Chasing Amy is also very good.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Very good.
Mallrats is Kevin Smith.
Because we saw
that at cinema in Leicester, didn't we?
We did. We went to a 80s and 90s cinema day, didn't we? Where we saw about four or five back-to-back, didn't we? So it was things like Back to the Future and...
We missed Back to the Future.
Because
we couldn't find a parking space. And I got lost in Leicester's one-way system.
But then we had Ferris Bueller's Day Off, didn't we? And Wayne's World. And we saw this.
Mallrats.
And I think there was...
Demolition Man
after that, wasn't there? So that was a great day. But Kevin Smith's a divisive figure. Paul Field at Pafster agrees with Clerks and Dogma. But he says he also ventured Orgasmo.
I've never seen Orgasmo. Considering I worship the altar of Trey Parker, I've never seen Orgasmo.
I've never seen Orgasmo. It's one of the, I've heard of Orgasmo, but it's one of them I think that gets lost.
Yeah,
but a bit like Basketball, which I know is a big favourite.
But Orgasmo is one that Trey Parker directed. Basketball, which another 90s comedy, which is I love that film so much.
Yeah,
I love Basketball.
You got me into Basketball. Yeah. And I agree.
But they only star in it because I think it's a Zucker Brothers film.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which you can kind of tell. But I think you've got because Trey and Matt are.
It's a mix, isn't it, of their style and the Zuckers. Really.
I still need to figure out how much input Trey and Matt had into that because there's a lot of crossover.
I think a fair bit. You know, if you watch Basketball, I think there's a fair bit of mix.
Which, and it's a great because I love those Zucker 80s films, particularly from the 80s. Yeah, yeah. And then you got the Trey and Matt bit, and it's like a brilliant combination of both.
It definitely.
It's. I think that's probably not the handover, but there's a lot of transitional elements into that. Because was Basketball before South Park?
It was about 97, I think, 98.
98.
It was just before South Park. Yeah. So it was at the point where they were becoming known. They'd be known for the TV show and things. Tom Barrick at Tommy Come Lately says Clerks again, which is proving very popular, and Austin Powers. Now, I'm assuming he means the first Austin Powers, although Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, and The Spy Who Shagged Me were both 90s. And
it's not
members.
7 and 9, weren't they?
So I love Austin Powers. They're
brilliant.
Hands down, and I know you won't agree with me on this, but they're hands down my favourite thing Mike Myers has ever done. Now, I know, you're shaking your head. We'll get to this. We're nearly there with
you're
this.
You're wrong.
But... But for me, I think I always thought Spy Who Shagged Me was the best one.
I think I do. It can't stand alone.
Well, the thing
that's
is
the only issue is that it's you can't watch it stood alone.
No,
I mean, well,
you need to
watch the first.
Well,
one.
All three of them, in many respects, feed into each other. And I mean, I'm a big defender of Goldmember anyway. Well, that's the noughties. Goldmember gets so much hate, and I think it's fantastic in many ways. It's one of my, it might be my favourite Austin Powers, but I don't think it's the best. I think probably Spy Who Shagged Me's the best.
There's a new story which you'll probably reference in a second about someone who did a, who apparently had been trying to field a script for a third version of, for a third film of Wayne's World.
We'll get to in a second. Yeah, we will.
And
well,
yeah, you tagged me into a comment saying, "Goes, is this you?" But then, but I actually had, I remember for ages having an idea for a third Austin Powers film.
Yeah.
Which was basically a spoof of Faith.
Or a third.
I think it was a third because
Goldmember.
Yeah. Where it was basically a spoof of the Nicolas Cage and John Travolta film Face Off.
Face Off.
Yeah. Where Austin Powers and Dr. Evil have to swap. I was like, I'm Dr. Evil, baby, yeah.
That'd be quite good.
Yeah.
I'm Austin Powers.
He goes, Shagadelic, baby. basically, it's just Dr. Evil and Austin Powers just quoting each other's
lines.
That
would be quite funny, though. Yeah. It might be more of a sketch than a movie, but it would be funny. Speaking of Wayne's World, our good friend Adam Massingham, who you can find at Massingham Adam because he's very good with these Twitter names, said Wayne's World. So I know he's a huge Wayne's World fan. I think you would agree, wouldn't you, really?
Oh, yeah. After those four films, the next level, Wayne's World, both of them.
Yeah. Well, you said afterwards, you on Twitter, you said, and Wayne's World 2. You added that, didn't you?
Yeah, it's one of those films where, depending on the last one I watched, my favourite one changes. It's the same issue I have with Life of Brian and The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail.
Which I talk about in a previous podcast, if you haven't listened to it.
It is a silly podcast, and both the content and the name of the podcast.
Yes.
Episode 13, check it out, pick a flick. But yeah.
Synergy.
No, wait, that's lesbians. but yeah. Anyone who likes Alan Partridge will get that joke. But no, Wayne's World... I've not seen Wayne's World 2 yet. You keep badgering me, but I will.
I'm sorry. It's, no, I know for a fact you will see Kim Basinger. Basinger, isn't it? Basinger.
Whatever.
Yeah. No, you'll see her in Wayne's World 2, and you will flip your lid. There's no way you will not love her in it.
Well, I love Kim Basinger in anything she's in anyway.
Yeah. She pretty much plays a femme fatale who tries to seduce Garth.
Brilliant.
And you'll watch it, and she's amazing in it.
Jaw on the floor.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we've debated this before. When I hadn't watched Wayne's World before we went to Leicester 2 or 3 years ago and watched this, and I haven't seen it since, admittedly. Now I liked it, but I didn't love it. I've had this discussion with you. I've had a discussion with Adam as well in the past.
Several times.
You are both and Lee Crimes, our friend Lee Crimes, who was with us on the day. You're staunch defenders of this. Now, I completely get that. There are certain comedies I'm the same with. And there are certain films that I'm the same with.
Then again, though, as we've probably Clerks, whatever the hell you pronounce it, I didn't like it. They're probably... But then again, you liked Wayne's World, but I didn't like what I sort of liked.
Exactly. I think the point with that is, and I think it's a very crucial point to this, and to comedy in general, we all grew up in the 90s. You, me, people like Brooker, Paul Field, who we've mentioned, Adam... I think you adore the comedy that you grew up watching. Yeah. You and Adam and Lee grew up watching Wayne's World, right? I grew up watching Austin Powers, actually, which is why I adore them.
Explains a lot.
Yeah, baby. And, you know, for the other guys we've mentioned, they would have grown up watching things like Clerks. So, you know, that level of devotion is one of the reasons why. So it's not that Wayne's World's a bad film. It's not at all. It made me laugh plenty. But I can't love it in the same way you do. And that frustrates you guys no end.
Yeah.
But I'd never turn around and say it was bad. And I think that's the danger with comedy, and especially with 90s comedy. I mean, my ultimate 90s comedy is Dumb and Dumber. And I know Dumb and Dumber inside out.
Yeah, and that I'm still a bit... It's enjoyable. I always found it disposable. Not bad, but... Disposable.
Exactly. You think of that probably the way I think of Wayne's World. And that is exactly... You do.
It's impossible for people to think of Wayne's World the way I think of Dumb and Dumber.
But it's not.
But it is.
And this is my point.
But it is.
Listen to me. It's that subjectivity, which is with comedy is, you know, so big. We've got a couple of others. Our mates at Fail Critics, at failcritics.com, our fellow podcasters, came up with a few of them. Said South Park, Big Long Run Cut. Well done. The Big Lebowski, which...
I don't think I've seen
that. I've never seen that, strangely enough. That. But then I haven't seen all the Coens yet, so there's... You know, and I believe that's...
I'm sure that's an episode of Pick a Flick.
It might be.
In the future.
The Mask with Jim Carrey. You must have seen The Mask
I've seen The Mask when I was younger. I remember liking it when I was younger. It's one of those, I think, fades with memory for me. And I've not got really a desire to rewatch it.
Mm.
I've never had any bad memories of it. I don't think it lasts. The legacy of a film that you watch doesn't last, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I didn't fall in love with it when I did with the Wayne's World.
Well, in fairness, you can quote Wayne's World coming out your ears. I can quote Dumb and Dumber coming out my ears, right? I don't think I can. Yeah. Coming in your ears. I don't think I can ever quote. I can quote The Mask. I don't think there's anything in The Mask that I can think back, really, and remember. The main thing I remember.
With these powers, I could be a superhero.
Oh, yeah.
That's about it.
But you had to say that to remind me of that.
Yeah.
The main thing I remember.
Being very young hormonal teenage boys at the time is Cameron Diaz.
I was about to say. Yeah. Cameron Diaz is just jaw-droppingly amazingly looking in that film.
Yeah.
And that was the first time she appears, really, on the screen. First time you ever saw her. And I was just like, how old would I be? 13 or something like that? And I was just like salivating, effectively, for like an hour. But like, yes. They also say Dogma and Clerks again. Probably loads of others, but they can't remember.
Man, so the same I'm going to get a lot of hate mail.
A lot of hate mail to the bottle episode. Feel free to, guys. It's just, the same ones keep coming up, interestingly enough. Kevin White, finally, at Weak Lemon Drink. I keep saying Weak Lemon Drink. That's not right. Sorry.
Weak Lemon, gotta catch them all.
Weak Lemon Drink.
Funny enough, it's Pokemon's 20th birthday today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Random fact of
Random
Laban.
Fact, there you go. Yeah, Kevin says South Park, again, The Big Lebowski, again, and Groundhog Day.
Oh, but yes.
Which is a very good... although, I wouldn't classify Groundhog Day as a comedy, a 90s comedy in inverted commas. I think Groundhog Day is timeless in that sense. It's obviously set in the 90s. In the 90s it was made, 93, wasn't it? But you could probably plop Groundhog Day in different
categories
and stuff. But
I think Groundhog Day, as a lot of the films that we've mentioned so far, we probably class them as masterpieces, but they're probably not seen as masterpieces in a wider critical net. Groundhog Day is probably one of those films that is, the term of phrase is put on a pedestal, but that always suggests to me that's when people put something that isn't deserving in a much higher praise, which is pretty much what we're doing with probably South Park, in all fairness. And probably what I do with Wayne's World and what you do with Dumb and Dumber, we put them on pedestals. Groundhog Day is probably one of those that deserves that. It's a cultural milestone in terms of filmmaking.
I think that's what I'm getting at. It's a genuine classic.
Yeah, and it's quite odd to put them in the same league as perhaps the films that we mentioned.
I think the distinction is, I think you're spot on. I think the distinction is the films we've talked about. I mean, to be fair, if you were to say comedy classics, Wayne's World would definitely be said by a lot of probably critics and fans. I don't think Dumb and Dumber would, to be honest, even though it's a very well thought of comedy, but I don't think anyone would call it a classic. I don't think people would say Austin Powers either. I think some people would say Clerks, but I don't think a lot of people would say Dogma. I think a lot of people would say The Big Lebowski. In fact, they may put The Big Lebowski more like a Groundhog Day level of classic.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to get at is that there's different distinctions, I think, depending, a major factor is depending on when you were born. We were kids of the 90s. We grew up in the 90s. The people who loved Ferris Bueller more were the people who were our age in the 80s when we were, you know, these are people in their 40s now. Those people would probably quote things like The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We were just being born, or we weren't born by that point.
We were breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. So I think a lot of it is down to your own touchstones as a kid.
Yes.
And
those
films really stay with you, don't they? So I think that's a major thing. And I don't think that's just 90s comedy, but I think that applies in general. But in terms of 90s comedy, what do you think is a major characteristic of a 90s comedy? Because I think there are.
Production values. I think production values for what? Well, for one.
Do you feel there's like almost like a Generation X kind of vibe to it?
Yes.
You know, I'd definitely say that with Wayne's World.
Yeah, because perhaps there's a lot more of a rockier subculture. Well, I think that's mainly because that's the main characters in that subculture anyway. But
if you think about a lot of 90s comedy, there were a lot of things, and we're going to get on to talking about one of these. There were a lot of teen comedies and a lot of comedies that were using elements of gross-out humour, I think, more than the 80s did.
But that's a lot later. That's like 99.
Yeah, admittedly, and we'll get to that. But like in terms of I think there's a generational shift in the 90s towards comedy that's a little bit more either grungy or a bit, little bit more rude and edgy. And that, you know, that characterised in the things towards the end of the decade, like South Park. I don't know, I just think there's a distinction between that.
Perhaps, yeah, because... Yes.
And you look at Kevin Smith, the Kevin Smith films, again, they're full of foul language. You know, they're full of rude gags. They're full of, you know, stoner characters, that sort of millennial, you know, malaise, really.
Okay. Your controller of the BBC, who's scheduling films to play over the Christmas period.
Okay.
Which decade of films, with 80s comedies or 90s comedies, would you feel being put better before The Watershed?
80s.
Which ones?
Definitely.
Because that thought just crops into me when you're talking about that. So do you think there's like a bit more of a, I don't want to say mature, but perhaps...
Not mature in the sense of the comedy being mature. Yeah. I know what you mean. For older audiences.
Yes.
So, like, it's the whole thing of how action films did the same kind of thing. You know, in that they... The 80s and 90s, that they got a lot more... When the big blockbustery 80s and 90s films came along for action, they got a lot more swearing and a lot more bloody with, you know, a lot of films of that ilk. But then comedies started to get into the 90s a lot more rude. And push testing the boundaries a bit more than your 80s comedies, which were a little bit more... I mean, you know, you look at the 80s, you immediately think of things like The Breakfast Club, Say Anything, which is, you know, Cameron Crowe and John Cusack with the boombox.
I've not seen that.
Great film. Really great film, probably. Cameron Crowe, I think he's massively overrated in general, but that's a great film. But, you know, they characterised a little bit more with a pre-millennial malaise, and I think this is where... Wayne's World is sending up a lot of the Nirvana grungy kind of underground world of rock. Films like The Mask have that sort of zaniness to them. Dumb and Dumber have that sort of, you know, zany farce to them. And then you've got things like...
Actually, Jim Carrey's early stuff, so Ace Ventura. Is very similar to The Mask in terms of... Well, it's earlier 90s, so it's in that transitional period. But again, that's probably something you wouldn't put on 7 p.m.
Right, exactly.
Well, on BBC One.
Well,
you put it on like 9 o'clock. On
maybe
BBC Two,
you might get away with it because it's a bit softer than. But it, even that's got a bit of rude stuff in it. Ace Ventura, certainly the first one. There are some real gags in that where you go, "Ooh, it's a bit naughty." But so there's things. There's also, I mean, there's other ones like Happy Gilmore again, which has that Adam Sandler's first major one, which has that sense of, you know, silly farce to it, which they didn't really have in the same way, I think, in the '80s. There are some interesting ones. Office Space, which is the
Mike Judge,
very underrated film.
I watched it the first time a couple of years ago, and a lot of that stuff is probably still prevalent now. I mean, I don't work in an office cubicle, but I work in an IT support section, and the scene where they just beat the shit out of a printer.
Yeah.
It's just, I was crying.
Yeah, it's really funny.
But then the amount of times I wanted to do that to printers, it's...
But then also, off the back of Dumb and Dumb, you had There's Something About Mary in 1998.
No, actually, no.
Which is, again, an interesting one.
Now, there's a moment that we'll come to this in a second, because it's brought up in one of the commentaries in the film we're about to speak about.
Yeah.
About when 90s comedies went from slightly mature to gross out.
Yeah.
Because
there was a shift.
In 97 to... 99, you've got... Oh, there was one in 97 which I can't remember off the top of my head. When was 10 Things I Hate About You?
That was 97 or 98, I think.
Yeah.
Again, which is a great 90s comedy.
Yeah. But then you'll have a film, I won't say yet, and then you'll have American Pie.
Yeah.
And American Pie kind of like launched the gross out stuff. So then by 2000 you had Van Wilder, Road Trip.
Yeah. And then it got Juice Bigelow. It went on from there, didn't it?
But then I'm trying to figure out that. So is there something about Mary, that turning point?
It could have been.
Because that was huge. That was huge in terms, and the fact there was a massive thing about, oh, it's so gross out, blah, blah, blah.
But it's not, actually. I mean, that's the thing. If you look back, we watched that recently, actually, me and my partner. And it's not, the main thing that people remember is the cum in the hair. That's the main thing. It's not massively gross. I think, if anything, Dumb and Dumber's more gross out to some extent than this.
Yeah.
Because that's more of a romantic comedy in a twisted kind of way. There's Something About Mary. Dumb and Dumber has that element, but it's much more two idiots, you know, on a road trip, and it's got some real gross out stuff.
Yeah, I think when you compare it to, I mean, I can't watch Van Wilder because of the scene with the, is it Fritter Rolls or Donuts?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can't watch Van Wilder because of that scene. That scene nearly made me throw up.
But this is it. It gets more and more, but it's all building towards that throughout the '90s. You know, you got things like Private Parts, which is the Howard Stern autobiographical thing with him in it. So, and that was quite edgy and rude in places. Things like Beavis and Butthead as well. Beavis and Butthead Do America in 1996, which Beavis and Butthead obviously were the MTV stoner millennial kind of generation.
And perhaps the precursor. And you could probably argue that's the precursor for the Sepok film because it was a TV spin-off, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it wasn't nearly as successful or well-known.
Actually, talking about TV spin-offs,
people remember.
90s comedy film that I feel so underrated is the first Brady Bunch film.
I've not seen that.
I think Gary Cole's in it as Mike Brady, but the idea being is that it's got the 70s comedy characters, but what happens is the 70s characters live in the 90s world, so they still hold all the 1970s sitcom values, but they're transplanted two decades. Yeah, so they're in the contemporary world. So they're all looking like long flowy hair and pretty much same, looking like the Betsy and Gabba. And like you just got all these Generation X's just going
going
what the hell.
But again, that shows that distinction.
But then there's a whole line of meta self-mockery in terms of that film as well
there's lots of different. I think really when you look at lists of the amount, there are so many. I'm going to reel off a bunch of these now, and I think these are some of the most memorable comedies. I can remember far more of these than I can a lot more than I've seen in the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. Here's some of the ones. The Waterboy.
Gatorade.
Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood. A League of Their Own.
I've not. What?
That's a spoof of Boys in the Hood.
It was the beginning
of the Wayans kind of thing, which led to Scary Movie and that kind of stuff.
I've never heard of that.
Well, there you go. There's one. Kingpin, which was again a Farrelly Brothers one.
Yes.
Things like Naked Gun. There was two Naked Gun films in the 90s. You know,
Smell of Fear.
Smell of Fear and then The Final Insult.
Oh, yeah. I've got that.
You had, exactly. Liar, Liar. You had Cool Runnings in like 94, yes, which is a classically beloved film by lots of people. The Cable Guy, which I've
not seen that.
I watched The Cable Guy again a couple of years ago. And while I don't like it very much, I see the merit in it. And it really was misunderstood. It really gave Jim Carrey's career a slight dent because he tried to do something very different. And I don't think works.
That's a couple of years before he went to Truman Show and he blew up again, wasn't it? Yeah.
But he'd already done like Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, and he was known for the modern day Jerry Lewis zaniness.
Yeah.
And he tried to be a little bit more sinister. And I don't like it particularly, but I understand that people didn't quite see it for what it was back at the time. So there's just loads. The Wedding Singer.
I love that film.
There's City Slickers. King Ralph. White Men Can't Jump, which is technically classed as a comedy as well. Bowfinger.
That's 90s.
Just at the end of the 90s. Bowfinger is one of my favourite comedies ever.
That's brilliant.
I would urge anyone, actually, as a little shout out to another podcast, to go and check out a podcast called Best Forgotten Movies, because they do an episode on Bowfinger, which is very good, very entertaining, and it just gets into that film a lot more.
Is that Eddie Murphy's last good film? Probably. That wasn't a Shrek film?
Yeah, actually. And that's one of the comments they make. And Steve Martin on that other podcast, Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy, it's the last great film they probably did. There's just so many. Clueless. Men in Black, which you can technically class as a comedy because it's an action comedy as well. There's just so many. And it's got a lot of comedies that skirt different kinds of genres but ultimately go back to being a little bit more, like I say, Generation X-y. And I think we're going to get on and talk about another one of those right now. So let's pick another flick. Can't Hardly Wait is a 1998 American teen comedy film written and directed by Deborah Kaplan and Harry Elfont. It stars an ensemble cast including Jennifer Love Hewitt, Ethan Embry, Charlie Cosmo, Lauren Ambrose, Peter Facinelli and Seth Green, and is notable for a number of Before They Were Famous appearances by teen stars.
Just a few.
This movie ranked number 44 on Entertainment Weekly's list of the 50 best high school movies. The story takes place at a high school graduation party, and in a style much like that of the high school movies of the 1980s, the filmmakers were inspired by their observation that in most teen films, the best scenes were the party scenes, and thus decided to make a movie set entirely at a party. The film takes its name from the replacement song of the same title from their 1987 album, Please to Meet Me, which plays over the film's closing credits.
Lights that flash in the evening.
Maybe just play that instead.
Yeah. I can't hardly wait.
Thank you. Let's have a look at this one.
Huntington Hillside, kiss my ass!
Oh, Mike Jackson, you have to sign my yearbook. Which team has the winning flag? Huntington, Huntington, hey, hey, hey!
There they are.
What are you doing, girls? Dudes, I need a game plan.
What game plan?
Right, exactly. Look, Beth, we need to talk. In fact, we all need to talk. Right, guys?
Oh my God, I can't believe she came.
Guys?
I've got to be honest, I can't hardly wait to have had the chance to talk to you about this. Mainly because for years, I have made this terrible joke where I've kept saying, I can't hardly wait to see this film, Latham. Which is funny probably only to you and I. Yeah. But like this is your favourite film, surely, isn't it? Or one of your favourite films.
Yeah,
is this in the four?
Yeah. So have the four been revealed now?
You've revealed three. Demolition Man.
Yeah.
South Park the Movie. Yeah. And this. So what's number four?
It's Shawshank Redemption.
Oh,
Shawshank
good.
Redemption is the other flawless one next to South Park.
Good choice.
So
we may have to do that on Pick a Flick one day. But
Shawshank is another completely flawless film.
Yeah.
As opposed
again, 90s.
To the other two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a comedy.
Definitely not a comedy. Yeah. But Can't Hardly Wait is. So why is it? Because it's not necessarily the most famous one of these kind of films. So
It's quite popular, one of those underground popular films.
But it's not mega known. So what is it about this?
I don't fully know why. It's one of those films, I absolutely love it to bits.
Yeah.
And there are elements in it, I think, that I've probably read too much into, considering I've watched it shit loads many times.
Yeah.
I've watched it twice in the last week. In preparation for this.
Oh, you poor man.
I know. And it's probably the only film I've ever known to have watched it again right after I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the only film I've watched once right after watching it. Twice in succession.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people have that. I don't know if you've had a film where you watched it.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, weirdly enough.
Well, you've not had a film that you've watched and then you've watched again?
I don't think so. Which is strange, really, but no.
Knowing you, it might have been a Bond film, but you probably just put
No, I did Bond immediately film. Think of a Bond film, actually, but I might have half an hour's break and have a wee.
I probably had a wee in between watching this film again. But
I don't remember doing that. So that shows your love of it.
Actually, that's a question I wouldn't mind hearing now, if there's other people who've watched the same film in succession.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, because there are people who, like, real film buffs, fanatics, they have films that they just watch on rotation. So, yeah, let us know, actually. Let us know on Twitter or Facebook. You know, what's your film that you've watched immediately straight after?
You've liked it that much.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... I just think it's funny. I quite like the characters in it. I identify quite a lot with Ethan Embry's character. Preston.
Yeah.
Quite a lot as well, in terms of what he goes through. And there's a very strange... Not strange. It's got a very interesting message in regards to the concept of fate and destiny.
Yeah.
In terms of... In which it says, yes, it's there, but there's also still the existence of free will. Which... It, and I've always been quite fascinated with the idea of free will versus destiny, to the point that watching it last night, I almost come up with the theory that this is a spiritual predecessor to the Adjustment Bureau film.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but in terms of the fact there's like there's still flexibility in free will and there's still a flexibility yeah. having free will.
Yeah.
And because that idea, and it kind of, it doesn't go too in depth as it should do, but it kind of takes that idea of the concept of film soulmates, where you have the main two, like the main female and male,
yeah,
you know, all they're meant to be together. In that, the film kind of suggests that it might not happen at the end, even though okay, it's a teen film in the '90s, so it is going to happen. But now, that's something I've always quite liked. So that message behind fate, where because there's two scenes in this film that I really that got to me. One, there's the one where he's on about. Where Preston, so Ethan Embry has this long soliloquy towards the camera where he goes, I don't know about you, but I always believe there's someone there for everybody, or there's a reason for this. And it's less about that, it's on about trying to figure out whether this theory he has about fate and soulmates actually works. And if not, then, well, at least he can say that he's tried to experience it. To which then you have the foreign exchange student going, would you like to touch my penis?
Cheetah. I am a sex machine.
Cheetah.
In fact, that I think was the moment that made me laugh the most in this film, when Preston's there and he says that to him. Yeah. I cracked up at that.
Tony actually hasn't said what he thought about this film yet, but let me just finish the next bit.
I bet you can't hardly wait to find out, Latham.
Man, I'm going to kill you till you die hard with a vengeance.
Touché, my friend. Touché.
You're not the only one who can use others' films against you.
Mine's better, though.
Ah. Just wait. I'm gonna think of the right perfect comeback, and it will demolition man you.
It would have worked if you got that right. I know.
Yeah. I mean, demolish is not in the title.
Yeah, good try though.
Yeah,
A for effort.
The second one is the uncredited appearance of Jenna Elfman, who I only just looked this up, and she was like 28 when this was filmed.
I had one of those moments where I went, is that Jenna Elfman? I wasn't sure.
To be fair, this film is full of them.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's loads.
Yeah, but yeah, Jenna Elfman turns up as like the uncredited angel stripper, and then she talks about her lifelong crush on Scott Baio. And the whole concept of the idea of fate, which gives Preston the idea to go back to the party, saying, no, there is fate, but it only takes you so far and you've got to act on it. And that's some. And I think that scene and that speech from Dharma,
Dharma and Greg,
pretty much twisted my view on life in terms of how perhaps the world works and that kind of stuff. So yeah, so that's how my view on life has been changed by this film. How the cosmological destiny and basically cosmological is the right word. But it's on about that thing where she's on about fate only takes you so far, etc., etc. And watching it last night, I suddenly realised if she spoke to Scott Baio, she wouldn't be there to tell Preston this. So Preston wouldn't have gone back to the party. So,
so you're saying that there's a double message there?
Yeah. So if she took on free will and went with what fate drove her to, she wouldn't have been. She probably. I don't know. Seduced Scott Baio with her preteen eyes.
I definitely think the film is skewed much more towards the idea of fate. Yeah. I mean, despite what she says. I mean, you know, there's a few... The whole... Everything with the letter, for a start. Where the way you see... It's almost like a... What kind of genre am I trying to get at? It's almost a little bit like a fairy tale way of doing it. That's the wrong word.
Yeah.
But in much more of a fairy tale kind of film, where that letter... He's dropped on the floor, a keg goes over it, it ends up on the turntable, flips over onto the you know, and you follow that letter as it gets to where it needs to get, and it gets to Amanda. And it's like, well, a film that wasn't about that, fate, the idea that she's going to read that letter, for instance, you know, is very much, that wouldn't happen. You know, and for instance, what happens with the character of Mike, who's the typical jock guy.
Yeah. funnily enough, at the main six at the moment, the one with the biggest career is Peter Facinelli.
Peter Facinelli, yeah. Because he went on and did
Twilight, and he's Twilight, in Supergirl at the moment.
Because Jennifer Love Hewitt doesn't do much anymore, and you've got, you know, she was the big, quite big star at the time, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think she was 19 when that was filmed.
Yes, yeah. So it's the thing is with it that it on the one hand, I think it's very much putting the two out there, because as I was saying with Mike, he chooses his path.
Yeah.
You know, by rejecting William, and then at the end it says that he put on loads of weight and, you know, got sacked from his job or whatever, and he just was a loser. He chooses that. He doesn't have to be that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So you have the two sides, really, don't you? You have the suggestion that this is all meant to be, and that slightly much more...
Not cautionary tale.
No. But there's a kind of a genre film. Fable. Maybe is the word I'm after. That kind of fable element to it. But then it's also got that element of, well, these guys make their own choices. So
So how would you fit that? So you've got Denise and Kenny. So you've got Lauren Ambrose and Seth Green. Looking really, really young.
Very young. Because Lauren Ambrose has just been in the X-Files revival. She's like, wow, I didn't recognise her at first. She's in the podgy area.
Yeah. I think our friend Lee Crimes loves Lauren Ambrose.
Yeah, he's a bit obsessed. Yeah. But Seth Green probably stealing the show, really, is. As the most uncool guy ever.
The original director's commentary is on that, and he spends the first half of the film in a foul British accent. He goes, "Oh, hello, I'm Seth Green. I play the role of Kenneth Fisher." And about halfway through, Deborah Kaplan goes, "Are you going to say that all the way through?" And he goes, "I was going to see how far I can get away." But no, yeah,
I think with Denise and Kenny, it's more that they choose what they're doing. You know, they actively make the choice.
But then how do they get... Because they both somehow get to... They have different independent ways of getting into that bathroom.
True.
Which, again, might have driven them to do that. But then they... But because they're in the situation, it's up to them, too, to make the most of what's happening now.
Well, exactly.
Which reflects, again, to that bit in the train station where it's pretty much the only reason for him to turn around was Preston's choice. Because Preston could have gone that train right now.
Exactly.
So Fate brought them there. But then it was Preston who had to turn around and just go...
Fate gets them so far, and then they have to make their own choices. So it's maybe... You know, you could argue that there's a mixed message there, but I think that's the entire point, that maybe it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
That's maybe what the film's saying.
Yeah. But like, I think the original name of the film was going to be called The Party. So it was going to be called The Party originally, but I don't know why they had to change it, and I can't remember how they got to Cotton Holly Wait. But... Because one of the things they did is that they tried to... In the script... you might hear some of the supporting characters have been called names, but in the scripts there was known by stock tropes. So you had Stoner Guy, Jock 1, Jock 2, Jock 3, the girl, the cheerleaders who are their friends. So you had like Jamie Presley.
Who
appears in the camera. And Tamala Jones, who I think might have been the last person I recognised in a previous watch in this, because she's now in Castle. She's like a regular in Castle.
There's so many.
Yeah, but...
In fact, later on, I'm going to ask you if you can name them all.
Oh, flipping out. Yeah, and then you've got the sound guy. The host is just known as the girl whose party it is. You've got the yearbook girl. And all that's kind of trope. The known mainly for the tropes, because they wanted to get all those tropes in. So you've got X-File 1, X-File 2, etc, etc.
I did love those guys. As a massive X-Files fan.
I'm going to ask you, so I'm assuming you actually like the film then.
No, I hated every minute of it. No, of course, I did. I did. I did.
I've been telling Tony, I want you to watch it, but if you hate it, please never tell me.
No. I think you'd have to be very like cynical and hard of heart to hate this. Actually,
yeah.
I don't think it's particularly funny, but then I don't really think it's trying to
it's
be all
not
the time.
Utterly hilarious.
It's more of a Yeah, it's more of a soft comedy.
Yeah.
Sort of drama, but it's not really a drama either. It sort of sits in the middle, and it's more of that kind of comedy fable element to it, really. So it wasn't laugh out loud funny like the South Park movie would be.
But it's
more about character. It's more of a character piece than a gag film. And you know, you do have it's more about the stereotypes and the designations of how kids put themselves in the funny part. So you've got people like Kenny. Him and his mates are like trying to be cool in the life of the party, and they are the most uncool idiots in the world. But they are oblivious.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, you know.
The fragrance sending love, Ken, bitch. Because, look, 92% going to sexual actors, 92% of people saying class or sex, what should I do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a 92% chance of embarrassing myself. I'd be up at the door and saying, you don't know what he's going to tell me to make me say you big papa, because I don't, y'all.
This is why you love this film, because you can quote it inside out.
I know, but it's very scary.
But then you've got people like... You've got people like Denise and Lauren Ambrose, who is the much more cynical girl who kind of also wants to fit in, you know, at the same time. She thinks a lot of them are idiots, but at the same time, she kind of wants some acceptance and wants some funness. And then you've got the dreamer, you know, in Preston, the guy who's just lovelorn. Oddly enough, you know what it reminded me of, in a way? Well, I say this came after, but How I Met Your Mother. In some respects, Preston reminds me of Ted from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, there's a bit of crossover there.
It's the same kind of story in the sense it's about this lovelorn guy who really wants to be with somebody, and he's very earnest in doing that. And then you've got the beautiful, traditionally attractive, you know, girl who's maybe starting to realise that that's, you know, in Jennifer Love Hewitt and Amanda, who's not. So it's playing with a lot of stereotypes and a lot of high school stereotypes from the 80s. You know, there's a very... You can tell there's a big inspiration from the John Hughes stable of comedy with this as well. It very much is, you know, looking back at things like St. Elmo's Fire and The Breakfast Club, and it's taking a cue from that, which is nice. And oddly enough, it feels less like a 90s comedy than anything else we've talked about today.
Yeah.
As a compliment.
It's quite interesting, because I was watching this and I was trying to figure out is whether some films in the 90s date...
I think they
do. like Wayne's World's dated. Wayne's World's dated.
The comedy's still funny, but it's dated. But
Can't Hardly Wait, not timeless, it doesn't feel like it's dated.
It's not too dated.
But then, I was thinking about this morning, so if the characters had social media and mobile phones, it would be slightly different.
If you made it today, a lot of the innocence would be gone. Unfortunately,
for half the film, like Amanda's trying to find out who Preston is. Facebook.
I think it would have to cut corners, and I think it would necessarily have to be a little bit more cynical in its approach. Yeah. And I think it wouldn't be as innocent. And I think what I quite liked about it was that it was quite a sweet film, and it was quite an innocent film, and it was quite romantic film in some respects. Yeah. It still had like some gags and some slightly, you know, sort of American Pie-ish humour. Yeah. But American Pie is taking a lot of that, fusing it with Porky's and a lot of the sex kind of comedy from the 70s and doing that for the noughties, for the millennials. Yeah. This is just before that. It's in that sweet spot.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's not a perfect film. There's a load of flaws in it, and I'll bring up some of them in a second. The last bit I want to love about it is that at the very end in the train station is it the Yazoo version of Only
You?
It's the exact
beautiful
same
song.
It's a beautiful. It's the exact same version that's used in The Office.
The Office.
The Tim and Dawn. So whenever I hear that song, it always reminds me of that moment in that film.
Yeah.
And Tim and Dawn is perhaps one of the few really romantic relationships in film that were one of the couples that I really got emotionally invested in. But then again, that time when that aired for the first time was like 2003, which was actually like a really crap period in my life as well. So there's a very strange connection with that song for me, in terms of it reminds me of these two like stories. I do recognise there's a amount of flaws in it, to the point where some of these flaws are comedic. Originally, because there's a lot... Originally, they wanted to put a lot more reference into drinking, because there's not much reference into drinking, and you don't actually see any characters drinking. There's a scene right near the end where you got William and Mike talking about when they clink glasses together, and then they put them down right away afterwards. Them clink and they put them down, because you don't actually see them drink down the shop, because that's the editing done that way. There's a scene where he goes, "I have no legs." What you see is actually he's holding what he's supposed to be holding is like a tequila, a shot glass, but they've CGI'd a lemon. So there's a weird floating lemon on his hand. In the background as well, there's a beer bong. They're supposed to be in the background, but what happens is that you'll see it and they CGI'd a really crap balloon in front of it in the background. But no, the stuff like that, and because one of the things they had, and they had a character called the drunk girl who was played by the girl who was Martha Brady in the Brady Bunch films.
Okay.
And her idea was that she was so drunk, she was, you couldn't understand a word she was saying. But she knew all the information. Mm. So, like, and it was all subtitled. And you see her briefly for when William's doing the Paradise City bit. And he's that, and,
yeah.
And you see a bunch of people being, like, crowd surfed. And you see this one, this girl. Like, and, like, and there's one scene where Amanda's trying to talk to her. And she's sat drunk, she can't talk. But the subtitles are saying, oh, I know Preston, I can give you his address, his phone number, everything. Yeah, but that there's quite a lot of almost comical attempts to edit stuff out. In the original trailer, there's a scene where Jason Segel comes in and says, like, I've been putting...
Yeah.
Well, he's basically filled this watermelon full of alcohol since the second grade, and it smashes to pieces. And whenever any time you see Jason Segel, he's only in it for, like, about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Every time you see him, he's always nursing this watermelon. He's like stroking this watermelon, and it's a very odd shape. But it the only reason, every time, though, is because it's full of alcohol. That's why he's eating the water.
Right, okay.
But then references to the drugs are gone as well. I mean, the bits with the brownies were supposed to be drugs. And there's a scene cut where Seth Green talks to Amber Benson. And you see her briefly looking at her banana.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you remember that bit.
No, I don't remember that
bit. It was just before William goes and gets the beer and drinks. And goes, beer's gone bad. But he's supposed to have a scene with Amber Benson. And this was like... years before she was even cast on Buffy as Tara.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because this is it. There's a lot of people in this film.
Yeah.
Let's go through then, right? Before we finish, close the book. I'm going to test you now. I'm going to do a quick few things, right?
Okay.
Firstly, thank you for nominating Can't Hardly Wait, because this was your nomination. We had to talk about it. I think we did talk about it once on Black Hole Cinema a long time ago now, a couple years ago. But
And you couldn't hardly wait to make that joke,
I couldn't hardly wait. I'm probably making that joke on that other podcast.
Because we start talking about Demolition Man.
Yeah.
By mistake, he goes, no, you can't hardly wait to talk about something.
So I'm going to ask you to name as many well-known people from this film who went on to be other things.
So do you want me to just give actors names, or perhaps name something they've been in afterwards?
If you want to do both, great, okay? But run down who you get and let's see if it matches.
Okay. So, you got Ethan Embry, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Peter Facinelli,
yeah.
Charlie Cosimo, who actually dropped off the face of the earth. But then he was also in Hook. He was...
Okay.
He's Robin Williams' kid in Hook.
Right. Well, that's going back a bit, isn't it?
So, Lauren Ambrose, who then went on to do 6 Feet Under, then a load of plays.
Yeah.
And then Seth Green, Robot Chicken.
Yeah.
Buffy, and obviously Buffy. Yeah. Everything. Okay, and then moving on to the supporting cast.
These are more difficult, because these people pop in and out.
Yes.
Okay, so...
So we've got... there's the guy who played Pete in an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who's the one who talks to Denise about the yearbook and wanting to keep the tassel. I can't remember his name, but he played Pete in episode 4 of season 3. Then you go to Chris Owens, who played Sherman in...
Shermanator. Very briefly there. You've mentioned Jason Segel.
Who's the guy with the watermelon. Amber Benson's in it.
Yeah.
Claire Duvall, Selma Blair.
Claire Duvall, as well, who went on to do lots of
Trust Me, I'm a Cheerleader.
Yeah,
Faculty. Selma Blair. Cruel Intentions. Zoe. There's that Cartoon Network live-action sitcom. Zoe, it renamed just to be Zoe.
Okay.
And I think she was Zoe. Sean Patrick Thomas. That's it.
Yeah.
I actually typed in Scott at first when I was writing the notes. He's in it. Freddie Rodriguez, who then went to go into 6 Feet Under.
Yeah.
With Lauren Ambrose.
And then Planet Terror, he was in.
Was
as in well.
That? Okay.
Yeah.
Jay Paulson's one of the X-Files.
Yeah.
Joel Mikley.
Yeah.
He's another X-File.
You've mentioned Jamie Presley as well. And
Paige
Jones.
Paige Moss.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, Jenna Elfman. Melissa Joan Hart.
Yeah. She's quite a notable cameo that we've got.
She's uncredited, actually. So.
Jerry O'Connell's uncredited as well.
Yeah. Selma Blair. Paige Moss, who the only time I ever seen her in anything was that she was in Buffy. She played Veruca, pretty much who went to Seth Green.
Yeah.
Jenna Elfman.
You mentioned Jenna Elfman.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You've got most of them. There's
Channon Roe, who is one of the jocks.
Yeah.
But I don't think... the only time he's been in it is that he was in... He played a zombie in the Zeppo in Buffy.
Okay.
Oh, God, there's someone else. Brecklinmeyer, Donald Faison.
Brecklinmeyer is a good one.
Yeah, you know,
who went on to Road Trip, didn't he?
Yeah, but do you know a key fact about Brecklinmeyer and this film?
Go on then.
He's married to Deborah Kaplan.
Is he really?
He's still married to Deborah Kaplan.
No way. That's great, wow.
Yeah. Donald Faison.
They got married in 2001, yeah.
Yeah. Donald Faison, those are the big two.
There is probably two more. They're lesser known, but they're well known. You have seen them in TV.
Oh, man.
And they've both been in regular recurring roles.
Leslie Grossman was in Popular.
Okay, that's not the one I'm
thinking of. She played Mary Cherry, who's my favourite character in that.
Okay. But these two, both men, both people, in fact, tell a lie, three. Three people who were in the same TV show in the noughties, in the last decade, that ran for quite a while, that had regular or recurring roles. And they were all in this. This is an interesting quiz fact.
Is this one that I've already mentioned? Or
no, no.
Or male?
Oh, no, sorry. Two of them are male, one's female.
And I've not mentioned them?
You've not mentioned them, no. And they only have very small parts. But they are all here. I'm going to tell you, otherwise, because this might be quite difficult to get.
Yeah.
Okay? You might get the TV show when I say this. Eric Balfour, Marisol Nichols, and Vicella Shannon.
Vicella Shannon is the memories guy. Haven?
No, you're going to kick yourself, because he's one of your favourite shows. Or it used to be.
I can't remember them. I know Eric Balfour was in
Buffy. Vicella Shannon plays the son of somebody in a show that ran for a long time that you love.
Oh, bloody hell.
He's a black guy.
Duh. No, was it down, Tony? Oh, my God. Marison Nichols. Who's Marison Nichols? I recognise the name.
you're gonna really kick yourself.
Oh, bloody hell, 24.
24!
Shit.
Because Vicella Shannon was David Palmer's son, right?
Keith?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He looks 30 in this.
No. He played David Palmer's son.
He played Keith in the first season?
Keith Palmer, yeah.
So who did Marison Nichols play?
He's 44 now. Marisol Nichols and Eric Balfour were both in season 6. And they were basically...
No, Eric Balfour was Milo. Milo in series 1 as well. He was in series 1.
He was absolutely right. And he came back then, didn't he? And he got shot and everything. She played Nadia Yassir in... she was one of the agents in CTU. She's probably mainly known
remember.
For that.
I can't remember her whatsoever. 24 episodes... No, I can't remember in... Yeah. I can't... She's supposed to be in 24 episodes of 24. Episodes.
Yeah, but it was a very... It was the season... The dodgy 24 season with Jack Bauer's dad as the baddie.
Oh, yeah,
And you know what I mean? And it was when they dropped a nuclear bomb in, like, episode 4, and everyone went, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
No. Dodgy. Yeah. The season you'd forget of 24, if you're going to forget anything. Okay. I'm going to consider that the quiz, all right? So, yeah, thank you, Matt, for joining me on this trawl through 90s comedy. I think we've covered some really interesting films, and we've got some interesting food for thought about movies. Thanks to everybody who ventured suggestions for films from the 90s, and we will probably do more decades of comedy as time goes on. So I can't hardly wait for that, Latham.
I'm sorry, you can't make that joke. That joke just lost all effect now you've watched the film.
I said this to you the other day. That bless you for thinking that this is the end of that, annoying you with that joke.
On a side note, I actually found Harry Alphont on Twitter last night. And pretty much, he doesn't tweet that regularly. Pretty much the majority of his tweets are replying to people who reference him about can't hardly wait.
So they make that same joke I do?
No.
Well, that's a shame.
But I bet you he's not
heard. Maybe I'll find him on Twitter and say that joke to him.
I'm pretty sure you might have to tweet this episode to him.
Yeah.
I love that film. Hi, Mr. Alphont.
Trust me, you can't hardly wait to listen to this. Boom!
If you've made it this far, you've already listened to it, so they can't hardly wait. They can't hardly wait to finish.
I can. I can't hardly wait for this to be over. Thanks, Matt. So where can we find you online?
Somewhere.
Thank you. Right, see you later.
No, I'm more TV-based than anything. So I have a website called The Bottle Episode, which is full of nice little reviews of TV, which you can find on www.bottleepisode.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter under @thebottleep, or if you really want to follow me, you can follow my personal account, which is Zandmat, which is XANDMAT.
Yeah, he's very fussy about who he lets on that one.
I know,
because he's elitist.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you want to be...
I'm a class elitist, like this film.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah. You can find us on Twitter at Pick a Flick and on Facebook, actually on Twitter at Pick a Flick Pod and on Facebook at Pick a Flick. So, you know, let us know what you think of the podcast. Give us any more suggestions for flicks you'd want us to cover and we'll talk about and we'll put them on the roster and we'll get some guests to talk about them. And yeah, we'll be back for another episode soon. So I can't hardly wait for that. So until then...
I can't hardly wait to be on Flick and Pick.
There we go. Until then... Remember, we pick the film, you talk about it. Simple.
No. Simple.
No, you pick the film, we talk about it. I said it the other way around.
We pick the film and then you talk about it. I couldn't hardly wait for you to make that mistake.
Bye.
Hi, Mom.
Everything worked out. What a happy end. Americans and Canadians are friends again. So let's all join hands and now go press them down.
Don't you know our little lives are now complete?
Cause Terrence and Philip are sweet.
Super sweet.
Thank God we live in this quiet little district. And let all the good boys be your good boys.
Tonight I feel ambitious and da 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 da. Sorry.